Lazo Vargas versus Holder, Mr. Pollack.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court. I'm representing Henry Lazo Vargas, the petitioner, and this morning I hope to explain two things. First, why this court has jurisdiction over this case, and then also why this court should remand the case to the Board of Immigration Appeals.
Would you start out explaining how our recent decision in Calma versus Holder affects your analysis of whether or not we have jurisdiction to review the petition?
Certainly. Well, Your Honor, first of all, this is review of a motion to reopen, and our claim is that the board overlooked important evidence, that it did not engage certain arguments, and that under this court's decisions in Iglesias and Champion, that it has jurisdiction because these claims have been recognized as legal claims. Does that respond adequately to your concern, Your Honor?
Well, go ahead with your argument.
All right. Well, those are our jurisdictional arguments. We're relying on those cases, the analysis that the board must basically articulate its decision in a sufficient manner to show that it has heard the arguments, that it has thought about the evidence, and if the decision does not reflect that, then this court can review the decision for error.
What do you think is your best argument that there's a legal issue for us to consider?
I really think our best argument, Your Honor, is that the board overlooked a critical argument that Henry Lazo Vargas's wife, Lena, she calls herself Lena, would suffer hardship due to the fact that her son, who's about 9 or 10 years old now, is living with her parents, due in part to her disability and their guardianship of her son, and that she would have to choose between accompanying her husband to Peru if he's removed or remaining here to be close to her son. There is nothing in the board's decision that
indicates... She can't take him with her?
Although, as I mentioned, the parents have guardianship, and the evidence is that due to her serious disabilities, she is not in a position to support and care for him as her parents are. Now, the board does acknowledge in a very sort of sweeping manner that she would suffer hardship, but it limits its acknowledgement of that to what it says is medical disabilities. And in the decision, it points to page numbers in the motion to reopen regarding her medical hardship. And I think those are pages 18 to 21. But the argument and information as to her separation from her son and this wrenching decision that she would have to make is on page 11 of the motion to reopen. So I think in response to, you know, why this is our best argument, it's because there is no reflection of it at all. And I think that this puts our case closely in line with the court's decision in Champion, in which the board assumed that the that the alien's child in the United States would be able to be taken care of by his father, but in fact the board didn't consider that the father was under removal proceedings himself, and therefore to address that issue that was not addressed below, the court decided that remand was appropriate. Now, there are other errors in addition to that that we would hope that the court would look at. We think that, first of all, the board's treatment of even the medical evidence is done in such a minimal and partial way that the court cannot determine that it really thought about the impact of the medical difficulties.
On both issues, are you saying? On the mother's Alzheimer's as well
yes.
as the wife's illness?
The mother's as well as the wife's. Now, they say in passing that they acknowledge that she has Alzheimer's disease.
Well, they not only did that, they actually credited all the evidence that he presented.
I think what they did really was they acknowledged that evidence was presented, but as we argue in our brief, acknowledgement that evidence is in the record is not the same as a reasoned consideration of that evidence. We really think that they went through the documents that were presented, they listed them in their decision, but that the decision under scrutiny really does not reflect a reasoned consideration of that evidence. It's very minimal, it's very mechanical, and it, if we were to allow them to issue these... Yes?
But they did say, didn't they, that they were fully crediting... Mm-hmm. All the evidence presented by the wife, didn't they?
Yes, but they were with
but
regard.
You know, I mean, what you're doing is you're insisting that they discuss all the evidence. You won't let them say, "Look, we've considered all this evidence. We agree there's tremendous hardship, but this person has such a bad criminal record that." We think it outweighs the hardship. Is that enough?
Not in this case. They did not acknowledge the separation or social hardship that the wife would have.
You're asking too much of them.
Well, they also made errors of fact, Your Honor. Both the immigration judge and the Board of Immigration Appeals specifically rely on an assumption that the mother... who has Alzheimer's, would be able to be taken care of by Henry's siblings in the United States. But there is evidence to the contrary in the record. And so they can say that they are weighing everything.
Nitpicking to a degree we wouldn't do with district judges, right?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
You're nitpicking to a degree we would not do with district judges.
Well... I think that where the standard of review is abuse of discretion, and part of that analysis should be, have they addressed the actual evidence? And what we have in this case is what I would classify as unusual and outstanding equities by the petitioner.
And we also have outstanding criminality by the...
I'm not saying that they...
balanced that, and they clearly were more impressed by the criminal activity of this person than by this hardship.
They were, but there's no indication that they gave any credence or credit to certain key pieces of evidence.
No, they said they believed everything. What should we do? Should we say they're lying?
Well, if they
said they credited it, but they didn't, right?
They are announcing that in a two-page decision, and
well, we can't set minimal page lengths for their decisions.
I'm not saying you should. I think that what you should require of the board is some reasoned explanation as to why the evidence that was presented that goes against their assumption, and I'm referring specifically to the treating
Look,
physician's letter.
We require a lot of the board. We reverse the board more than any other circuit, but there are limits, right? You could reverse every one of their decisions, right? They're never that good. They're always leaving things out. Can't do that.
I think this court is justified in reviewing the record carefully.
This case is too weak. I don't agree with you. This case is too weak. His case is very weak.
Your Honor, I see that my time is up. I'd like to reserve the 2 minutes
for rebuttal.
Okay,
that's fine. Thank you, Mr. Pollack. Mr. Goring?
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the Court. Alex Goring on behalf of the Attorney General, Your Honors.
So do you think comma changes anything? Or?
Well, I think comma reemphasizes the lack of jurisdiction this Court has over the case, because in comma, the Court noted that judicial review is foreclosed by 1252A2BI if the agency's rationale for denying the procedural request, in this case the motion to reopen, also establishes the petitioner's inability to prevail on the merits of his underlying claim. Here, that's exactly what happened. The motion to reopen was essentially denied because the Board said, even considering everything you put forth before the immigration judge and all your new evidence now, we would still deny you adjustment of status as a matter of discretion. And I think comma, if anything, reemphasizes the Court's lack of jurisdiction in that regard, Your Honor. If I may just make a brief point before going into the jurisdiction arguments and counsel's claims, to the extent that counsel is challenging the underlying immigration judge's decision because he did file two separate petitions for review that were consolidated in this case, he has abandoned any challenge to the underlying immigration judge's decision and the Board's affirmance of that decision by because he failed to raise any issues whatsoever in his brief concerning that matter. So what is before the Court today is solely the motion to reopen. I would note, first of all, that the Board here denied the motion to reopen for two separate and distinct reasons. First, as was discussed, the Board said, we would deny you adjustment of status as a matter of discretion. Hence, this Court lacks jurisdiction over that claim. The Board also said, we're going to deny your motion to reopen in the exercise of pure discretion. We would submit that the petitioner has waived any challenge to that claim because he didn't even reference the Board's decision in that regard in his opening brief. And in fact, the pages he relies on in his reply brief to say that he did, again, pages 8 through 10 of his brief, make no mention whatsoever of this alternative dispositive determination. Setting that aside, if I may briefly go back to the first grounds for the Board's denial of the motion, that is that he was unworthy of a favorable exercise of discretion for adjustment of status, even considering all the new evidence. I think petitioner's case is actually like the Court's decision in Musa, where he's essentially attempting to nitpick the Board's that the Board didn't mention this particular factor, that particular factor. But as petitioner's counsel has conceded, the Board credited everything he submitted. And they simply found that in an ultimate weighing of the factors, his continuing criminal record, which began in 1993, the year he illegally entered the United States, and has continued even after he was in proceedings, including a conviction for battery and yet another conviction after the Board's first decision, outweighed whatever positive factors he had set forth. This is the classic quintessential judgment under adjustment of status. And again, while petitioner may – what petitioner is essentially seeking is a reweighing of the factors, which this Court may not do. If the Court has no further questions for me, I'll rest on the government's brief. Thank you, Your Honor.
Mr. Pollack, how much time does he have? 1 minute.
I want to make clear we're not trying to minimize Henry's bad behavior in the past, but the government and the Board also overstate the seriousness on the record. First of all, the government makes an argument in their brief that Henry was convicted of two batteries, one in 2008 and one in 2009. The record is clear in the court disposition at record page 832 that the February 2009 entry on the police disposition was actually his reporting on the battery from 2008.
He doesn't have four convictions for battery?
He has convictions for battery, but he does not have a 2009 conviction for battery, as they state.
But does he have four convictions for battery?
He may have four convictions for battery, but they predate what the Board and the government claim.
Four convictions for driving under the influence, two convictions for bail jumping, one conviction for intimidating a victim, one conviction for resisting obstructing a police officer.
We're not contesting any of that, and we're not minimizing it, but it is old, and his last offense was in 2008. Now, That's not a long, long time ago, but he testified at his hearing that this was due to his drinking problem, that he had stopped drinking the year before, and as far as I know, he has not reoffended since 2008, and he's taking care of people who need to be taken care of. So with that, I would conclude, and thank you very much.
Okay, well, thank you very much, Mr. Pollack and Mr. Gehring.